Introducing the ultimate seat cover, Tiger Tough. Proudly made in the US of A, waterproof and backed by an unconditional warranty. Yes, you heard it right. 2 years on vehicles and a lifetime guarantee on heavy equipment, they have you covered for manufacturer defects, normal wear and tear, and even those oh shit moments. Tiger Tough covers are meticulously crafted for a perfect fit with over 30,000 pre-fit designs, ensuring they stay in place without any shifting or sliding. Plus, they're even machine washable. Don't settle for less. Get a seat cover today that's built to last. Order today at tigertough.com/dirt. Get a free logo embroidery on your first order if you use the code DIRTBAG at checkout. Once received, show us your new badass seat covers with your logo and tag us. Experience durability and quality with Tiger Tough seat covers. Toughness guaranteed.
What's up, you dirtbags? My name is Luke Eggebrotten, your co-host of the Dirtbags podcast. We've got another special Dirt Tales segment. As a reminder, these are our shorter segments, a little bit easier to listen to, bringing on guests in the dirt world onto the podcast, and also to give our main man, the other co-host, Luke Payne, a little bit of a break. As you all know, summertime in construction is absolutely crazy. So Luke and I talked about it, and we knew we both wanted to produce more content on the Dirtbags, but at the same time too, he knew his limitations of how often he could come on. So we developed this new Dirt Tales segment for you guys, just to give some shorter stories and to bring on some of these personalities that we all know through social media or just have seen at trade shows, and to really dive in a bit further. So I'm super excited to introduce you guys. If you don't already follow him, you should definitely give him a follow right now. We've been connected now for a few years, and then he's been a day one Dirtbags listener. So it was perfect timing to bring the man, Sam Custer, onto the show. He owns Custer Precast Concrete and Custer Earthworks. How's it going, man?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. It's good to have you on the show finally.
Yeah.
I know it happened quick too. We were messaging the other day and I was like, dude, it all kind of opened up. I'm like, we got to have you on the podcast to talk about that. So thank you for jumping on here.
Yeah, for sure. Happy to be excited.
So to bring you back a little bit, you started your businesses is about 3 or 4 years ago, right?
Yeah. So we started the Custer Precast in 2021. And then Earthworks kind of followed with it. Earthworks didn't get as big, you know, for probably 2 years, year and a half after that. But Precast was first in 2021. And then Earthworks was, I believe, 2022, at the end of 2022 is when we were always doing earthwork and dirt work and all that, but we were doing it underneath the Custer Precast name.
Gotcha.
And then it just kind of, you know, people knew we were doing precast, but people didn't know we were doing earthwork. So that's when I decided that we were going to split them up, create two different LLCs and run with it. So,
yeah, it's interesting too, because I think when I hear that, there's not a whole lot of niches within construction that we talk with. And so it's really cool when you get to uncover some that where you're an expert in that niche. And you're definitely our first like precast concrete. And also too, I was thinking about it. Most people I think would start earthworks then go precast, but you went the other way. So how did you start with precast and then grow into the earthwork side as well?
So for the last like 12, 13 years, I've also been a paramedic. And so I was doing that full time and I was always kind of helping out. Like I help out a rancher down the street a lot, you know, on my days off. And I'm a big auction guy. I like to watch the auctions and see what's coming.
Oh yeah.
And I was watching an auction that I watch quite often down in Denver, and a whole entire precast concrete setup had hit their auction. It was one lot, buy it all and see what happens kind of deal.
No way.
So, yeah. And I was talking to my wife about it and I said, you know, it might be something to do. I said, you know, it might be something that can get us some, you know, good income and might be pretty fun, kind of a niche kind of, there's not really a smaller precast concrete company here in Casper area. They're all big guys. And, you know, my father-in-law does it as well. He does precast concrete down in Colorado. So I talked to him about it and, you know, I started putting bids on it and I was sitting right here one morning, putting bids on it. And all of a sudden said, you're the winner. And
no way.
Yeah, I think four or five gooseneck trailer loads later, all the way up to Casper, we had it up here. And it took us about 4 months, well, about two to three months to find a shop and find some area to do it, and then, you know, get in the groove. And then it finally took off. So,
man, so what does that look like? You're on the auction site, and what is, like, what are they looking for? How much is it buying that kind of thing cost? Or
there's no reserve on it.
No reserve.
No reserve. And I had done some research, you know, at like what new forms like that would cost. And I think it came with two or three mixers and, you know, a whole bunch of what parking block forms, you know, like curb stops for parking lots. It came with like probably 200 of those. So I was looking at pricing and comparing, and I didn't really know where to go with it. I just was like, I kind of had set a limit in my mind. And I said, if we get to that, I'm going to do it. If we don't, we'll find something different to do. And we got
what was it. What was the limit that you set for yourself, and what'd you get it for?
I had set myself a $21,000 limit. That was basically everything that I had. I borrowed a little money from my mom and said, you know, we'll get you paid back as soon as we can. And I think we ended up getting it for $12,500.
No way. I love the no reserve auctions, because anything can happen. Anything goes. So,
but it gets nerve wracking because, you know, you put a bid in on that last 2 minutes and it extends the time. So, you know, you're sitting in front of a computer, you're fighting with some dude probably 10,000 miles away or whatever. And yeah, we got it. So
this is, 3 or 4 years ago. And to be clear, you had never, like, your family had been in the business, but you didn't have an LLC set up. You didn't have anything. You were buying the equipment, and then if you got it, you were going to set everything up.
Yep. That was going to be the starting. I wanted to get the equipment. I wanted to get things. There's no sense in getting an LLC and getting all the insurance and all that.
You don't get it.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. So you get the equipment, and this is a question Luke and I usually get on the podcast is, you know, what is step 1 through 10? Like, how do you start a business? So did you jump into that full time, or you're still a paramedic? And then also, you know, what was the level of between getting the LLC, the EIN number, the, you know, website, that kind of stuff, if you could walk through that.
Yeah. So, I did precast. I did everything for about 2 years, still working a full-time gig. And then I dropped to part-time, but anyway, so yeah, I bought the equipment, and then it was time to find a place, because I couldn't do it at our house. There's just not enough room. There's not a shop. There's not enough power, so on and so forth. So trying to find a place, and we searched, we almost went one town over, even 45 minutes away, and we're about ready to rent a shop there. And then one shop popped up for lease here in Casper. I called the guy that afternoon. Him and I worked a deal, a handshake deal, and we moved all of our stuff over the next day.
Wow.
The day after that, I got insurance, because I had to have renter's insurance on the shop. I've got all this equipment now over there. If it burns down, it's a loss. So the next day I went and got insurance. I started an LLC that morning. I went online, got the taxpayer ID number, and then went down to the insurance agency and got an insurance policy, just, you know, limited liability or whatever. And and then I just started word of mouth in it. We didn't have a website. We had a Facebook page, but I was knocking on doors of all the asphalt guys I could, you know, because, you know, with asphalt comes usually curb stops and parking. So we were, you know, hitting the ground with that. And then you know, the Facebook really wasn't getting us much traction. So I think right after that or so, we started a website. Just went on to, you know, Wix or whatever it's called, and just created a simple website just so people could see our products and everything like that. But to this day, we've still really had a large word of mouth. You know, that's primarily how we get our business, is word of mouth and repeat customers. And, you know, nowadays we do a lot of oil field work, a lot of precast pads with anchors in them, you know, everybody's buying our parking blocks now. They're running pipe on top of them over the ground. And we're starting to get into maybe doing some vaults this year. With precast, it's hard to get into that bigger stuff, because there's such a strict governing agency over it. So, like, you know, we can't do stuff for like Department of Transportation, because we're not a certified precast, you know, concrete plant, but we stay pretty busy with all the other stuff. So.
Gotcha. So is that something that you typically would want to stay out of, is the certified governing stuff? Or is that, like, do you like being private?
I do. And it's not so much, you would still be private, but
gotcha.
They come in, they inspect everything. You've got to, you know, you have all these processes and all these policies, which we, you know, we have most of them just because we're a business, but, you know, they take it to the next level. And in order to get to that next level, it takes a pretty large amount of, you know, capital.
Yeah.
And after you make that jump, you got to have enough business after that to sustain that huge amount you just invested to becoming certified. So maybe someday, right now it's not on my mind. I just, you know, we stay pretty dang busy with what we got. So,
yeah, I mean, you're just in a different stage as well. And probably like most or a good chunk of people listening that are typically 2 to 5 years into business is, you know, we're all focused on growth right now, but at the same time too, it's like getting that book of business built up and making sure that you're taking care of every single client, customer, GC, whoever it might be. And I'm even doing the same thing on my end. You know, we're coming up on 5 years with Phaser Marketing, and it's your reputation is everything. I know Luke and I have talked about that many times on the podcast, but grow at the pace that you're able to grow. And I know with you, I thought this was so interesting, and I really wanted to touch on this on the podcast, but when you and I were texting back and forth, you were saying you're kind of growing against your will, which I thought was fascinating. And
in the earthwork sector, we are.
Yeah. For people listening, I want to hear you unpack this of what you mean by that, because I think some people might be in this stage and not even realize it. So what do you mean by growing against your will on the earthwork side of things?
Yeah. So for me, it's primarily scheduling. I don't even know why I make a schedule anymore. We've been prepping to move into a pretty large job for the last 30 days now. And it's almost been every single day we're waiting. Like, when are you going to get us in there? When are you going to get us in there? And now, you know, I had this job planned 30 days ago and I had other jobs planned for now, but now I'm having to scoot everything around. And, you know, what comes with that is, you know, now I've got potentially 2 or 3 jobs going. So now I got to have guys over here. I got to have guys over here. I got to have this piece of equipment over here, but I don't got 2 of them. So I'm going to have to rent one for over there, but I got to figure out which one I can rent one on, because which one has a little bit more profit built into it to cover the rental and stuff like that. And, you know, with that comes growth. I mean, I've got 2 excavators on rent right now. I've got a water truck on rent right now. And just because they're on rent, you know, I don't own them, but I'm still growing. I'm still needing more equipment. And on the flip side of that, I don't have enough guys because, you know, the precast world's kind of blowing up right now as well. So I got to have guys over there pouring concrete, and then I got to have guys trying to run multiple jobs, and I'm kind of bouncing back and forth between them all. And, you know, I think that comes with growth, or that's the growth part. And then on top of all that, I'm working on this huge, we're doing a huge campground project here in town. Yeah. And I've had parts on back order for about 6 weeks now. So, you know, when those parts finally show up, that owner's going to be hounding on us to go put them in, get his campground fired up. And so I'm going to have to move more equipment around. And it's just, you know, it's not so much growth in size, but it's just growth and trying to figure out the logistics and, you know, how we're going to manage this job on top of this job, and, you know, how we're going to afford to get material over there. But they're not going to pay for 45 days, but, you know, these people are going to pay for 30. So maybe we should move material there. And so it's just a juggling act.
Yeah, I wrote that down of just logistics, time management, and just like knowing, like problem solving almost, because it's never going to go as planned. And if it would, I think everybody listening would have a roaring successful excavation company. But it's just, this is probably one of the most ridiculous, toughest industries I've ever seen, because not only is the scheduling a mess usually, but the capital intensive equipment that you need. And then on the flip side of that too, getting paid, that almost across the board has been an issue for anyone we've talked to. So it's too bad that you do the work. And even if you just got paid on time, you could run a very successful business, but they'll throw that wrench in there of, you thought you finished and you're going to get paid, but we're going to hold this out for another, you know, 35, 60 days.
Yeah. Or what we're seeing is we're going to hold 10% retainage.
Yeah.
But our landscaping sub's not going to be there for 4 months because it's March. So we're not going to mark the job as complete until the landscaping sub's done. And so now you're waiting on your 10% even farther. And I mean, I pick and choose my jobs pretty in the earthwork side of things. I pick and choose pretty hard. You know, I'm going to go after jobs with generals that I know.
Yeah.
And generals that I can maybe do a little negotiation with, like, hey, like, you know, when March, when you guys are at substantial completion, like, let's talk about releasing a little bit of that retainage. Or, you know, hey, let's do maybe some joint checks on this. I mean, everybody says joint checks are bad, or not, maybe not everybody, but there's a stigma around them that if you're getting a joint check from a general, you know, you're out of money. And I think that's wrong. I think that that's the worst way to look at it. I think if I can negotiate joint checking on a job to pay my material suppliers, I'm not seeing that money anyways. Like, it's not my money to spend. It helps my books by getting them paid on time, and I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. So for anyone listening too, if you could describe joint checks and what that means, what would that situation be?
So the way I know of it and the way we've done it in the past, and I'm not, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm no financial mastermind, but sometimes we have generals that'll do joint checks. So we submit almost two pay apps. We submit a pay app for Custer Earthworks. And that's usually labor, equipment costs, all that jazz. And then we submit another pay app of our material that's already on site. And what the general issue two checks, you know, one to Knife River, or, you know, not Menards, but Knife River or Dana Kempner's, who our pipe supplier is. And then those checks just go directly to them. And then we get our cut and they get their cut. And it's pretty rare to find that. And you kind of have to negotiate, I feel like. I wish there was more of it. I wish that's how it always was. But the subs take 100% of the, you know, 100% of the liability. So
absolutely. Yeah. And I put this down as well, but business is a long game, especially in, you know, the earthwork side of things, because people that have been through it maybe 5, 10, 20 years, they can tell a lot of people that are just starting maybe a couple of years in business that you're going to have this happen. It's just inevitable. So the longer you can stay in business, typically the better off you are. And unfortunately, I'm seeing this time of year very tough for a lot of contractors, and unfortunately, like, it's a tough time of year, but the last 3 years have been booming and amazing. And so it's, you know, playing the long game of always, you know, getting through the hills and valleys, but you know, not taking out too much cash when it is going well, but making sure you're reinvesting it as well, setting yourself up for when inevitably it is going to hit that valley and, you know, shit is going to hit the fan.
Right. Yeah. And that's winter for us.
Yeah.
You know, so like right now I'm, you know, I've got three or four jobs sitting here that I'm looking at bidding, and I'm, you know, the problem with us is I'll go anywhere. I'll go all over the state. And, you know, I'm looking at some of these jobs like, well, that road gets pretty, pretty dicey in the winter. Maybe we won't do it, you know? And so now I'm like, well, if we don't do it, what do I need to set aside to get through January? Or what do I, you know, just stuff like that. And on the flip side of that, you know, you got to keep people paying, and that can get dicey this time of year. So
yeah, so I mean, you're in Wyoming, so you have some of the craziest weather where it can just turn on a dime. And what does your winter look like as far as work? And then how do you keep people paid, or do you lay people off, or do they kind of go 40 hours a week, or what's the situation there?
So last winter we had a real mild winter. We didn't get much snow. The snow we did get was gone pretty fast. It didn't get very, it got cold. But we didn't get much frost in the ground. I mean, we did actually pretty, last winter was actually pretty rare for us. So we actually dug all through the winter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We went at it. We started a 4,000 foot sewer main in January.
Wow.
So we went hard. Yeah, we did. And I was lucky. We were able to keep everybody at 40 hours. Winter's also our stockpile season for precast. So I might throw a couple extra guys over there off the earthwork side. They can pour concrete all winter and kind of get stockpiled for the summer run. But I mean, the winter before that, there was weeks we wouldn't have been able to work. And, you know, I only had a couple, you know, that was Trying to think. I think I only had two guys working for me that winter, and they were pretty okay with taking January off.
Yeah.
So they just took January off pretty much, and we
Yeah.
started back up middle of February probably.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of our clients up in Wyoming, Montana, Minnesota, North Dakota, like there is a little bit of that, hey, if you're okay with it, and from what I've heard from our clients, the employees are okay with it, and they're like, yeah, we'll just plan on taking January off if needed. And if you can have that flexibility, which is a lot to ask for, of course, because we're really just looking for decent employees, but if you can have some of that flexibility, it is a game changer, I'm sure, as and you've experienced, because then it doesn't have so much of that stress on you where it's like you're literally firing people.
It'll still stress me out. It still does stress me out because I want to take care of my guys the best I can.
Yeah.
And I want to keep them moving. I want to keep them working. I want to keep supporting them, with paychecks, of course. But I mean, when there's 3 feet of snow outside and it's negative 35 with the windshield, we ain't working, you know?
Yeah. Well, you were telling me you had was it a snowstorm a couple years ago or so where you had like
Yeah, so it's
huge
two.
walls and you brought the grader home just to get home?
Yes, it was two winters ago. It snowed probably 3 feet at one shot, and then I live out here in the boonies. I live about 30 miles outside of town, and I had and when it blows out here. And
Yeah.
I had a snow drift taller than my truck for about 100 feet down my driveway, and I couldn't get out for a week. I was stuck here for a week, and then my neighbor. Well, my kind of neighbor, he lives about 5 miles away. He was snow blowing the road and got to my driveway. And I mean, I still got half a mile from the house to the road.
Yeah.
So I traipsed down there and my other buddy came and picked me up and gave me a ride to town. And I brought the grader home and pushed some snow around. But so it's just, you never know. I mean, I know a couple guys that have been in Casper for 30, 35 years, and they say 2 winters ago was the worst winter they'd ever seen.
Wow.
I mean, for instance, it got negative 70 with the wind chill at the airport. I mean, jet fuel was freezing.
Dude, that's why because I lived in northern Minnesota here, but that's why I moved to the desert. I was done with the snow and done with the cold.
So it's been all right. I mean, hopefully this winter is like last winter and we can keep trucking, but
Yeah, at least you're not doing commercial snow removal or anything like that to keep the bills paid. But have you dabbled in that in years past, or would
Yeah,
you?
so I've done some snow removal, mainly just hauling the skid steer around, and
Yeah.
I do some work for some clients here in Casper that have big laydown yards and some big parking lots, and we'll go over and push them out, and then when we get these big snows like we got, it's kind of all hands on deck. Like
For sure.
you got a machine, get going. Like
Yeah.
it's time to help out everybody, and we'll try to pitch in where we can, and worry about the paycheck later, but.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's a good way to, yeah, like you said, all hands on deck, especially out in Wyoming too, when you do have storms like that. It's if you've got the equipment and you've got some of the manpower, and honestly too, like people that can operate the equipment, not everyone can jump in and like move snow. And so it for you guys, it's like second nature. I mean, you can easily go in and get her done.
We're pretty good at it. I don't advertise snow removal.
Yeah.
I don't have an account at the auto parts store, so I don't want to afford snow removal. Seems like
Right.
it breaks every time it snows. And on the flip side of that, this past couple years, I've actually enjoyed taking some time off in the wintertime and going. We went to Mexico for the first. We didn't. My wife and I have been married 10 years. We've never been on a honeymoon. We went to Mexico last year for the first time. We called that our honeymoon, and it was kind of nice to get
Wow.
away, and I don't want to be in Mexico worrying about snow and Casper.
Yeah, dude, absolutely. I mean, congratulations. Like, there's a lot of people that would love to, and I think they can do it. It's just, it does take a little bit of planning
It
of,
does.
getting away for a week or 2 weeks in the winter. And if your whole business is reliant on snow removal, then you probably can't go away. And so
Yeah.
it's,
It's a big commitment.
you got to work into it and work up to it. But it's, that's awesome though that you guys went, did the honeymoon. And I know we were talking about this before too, but so obviously you're married and no kids, right?
No kids, no.
So no kids. I thought this is something super interesting to touch on here. Your wife is in Tucson, Arizona, and jumping around the country, like through her rotational in out of vet school, right?
Yep.
So you guys transitioned because you guys were a double income household. And then when she went to school, then you guys were just solo income.
Yep. Yep. It was me and only me. And the funny part is, so she'd been going to school for a long time, not a long time, but quite a while, working on her degrees and stuff. But at the same time, she was working in next town over at the vet clinic as a vet tech. And it's kind of like secretary vet tech kind of deal. And she'd been always working towards like a bachelor's in animal science or equine science, whatever. And then, you know, we were talking about it, and this was probably 4 years ago now, somewhere around there. She was like, well, I think I might apply for vet school. I was like, okay, yeah, let's do it. I mean, there's a vet school down in Colorado, and they're all over the place. I was like, go right ahead, you know? So the first year she decided to apply for vet school, she just due to like the prerequisites and the classes and everything, and I don't understand it. I'm uneducated, so I don't know, but she could only apply to four vet schools out of like, I don't know how many there are, 20. And it was all no's. It was all no's, you know? So she took some more classes that next couple semesters. And then the time came around again to apply for vet school. And I think she was applying in April of that year. And I had bought the precast company in February or March of that year. And was kind of under the impression of, we'll figure it out when it happens.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't happen, we have the precast to kind of help us out and boost things up. So, God, how did it work? She applied to 11 schools and she got 10 no's. And, you know, was pretty beside herself about it. You know, that's a pretty big hit.
Yeah.
For anybody listening that don't know, vet school is extremely hard to get into. It's long interview processes, many tests, all this interviewing. So it was like middle of July that year. This was in 2022. It was in middle of July. And she got the call from University of Arizona. Hey, you've been accepted to our vet school. But she had to be down there like August 1st. We had like 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
We had like 2 weeks to find an apartment, get all of her stuff down there. I had to take off work, you know, to figure out all this. So we load up the car and drove down to Tucson, moved her into an apartment. And, you know, just like that, I got a bachelor pad overnight and was taking care of everything. And we got things figured out. It was tough at first. I mean, it's still tough being apart. And
yeah,
she does quite a bit of my books. And we just,
we
FaceTime every night almost and go over stuff. And it's going to be a little harder this year because she's going to be doing so much traveling and all of her clinical stuff. So now I'm learning the ins and outs of QuickBooks a little bit more. And I'm going to start taking care of some of that stuff, take some load off her. But yeah, it's been interesting. It's, you know, she was working, so we had her income. And then I was still working full time as a flight paramedic on the helicopter. And so I had that income. And then I was just going to start concrete up on the side. And then it quickly turned into whatever's going to pay me more, I got to do. And that was concrete.
Absolutely.
So I dove in head first to the concrete by myself, me and the dogs. You've seen them on Instagram.
Yeah.
Me and the dogs dove into it head first. And it took me about a year and a half to get to the point where I could go part-time doing the paramedic stuff. And then, you know, on top of all that, earthworks is just blown up on me in the middle of all that. So
yeah,
we're doing.
Dude, that's crazy. Like, I know your wife especially is such a big support system for any of us, wife or husband, whatever it might be, or just your life partner. And for her to be like across the country, and it's not like it's your girlfriend. I mean, this is your wife. Like, that's so
stuck. Yeah.
That's so tough. And, but at the same time too, you probably, you know, you guys are no matter what in this together, obviously. So you're, and it's also her dream and her career path to get her done. So, you know, also huge props to her for Cause that's sacrifice in itself for both of you, but especially her to say like, I really want to pursue this. Let's go do it. And then obviously props to you for supporting her through that whole thing. Cause that sounds tough. I mean, for anyone, even when your wife is home, it's like, it's business is still hard, but the fact that you're down to a single income and it's on the business, I'm sure insurance and everything is all private. Oh,
yeah.
So
yeah,
I mean, that's tough, man.
Yeah, health insurance, vehicle insurance, you know. And to top it off, you know, for the last 2 years, I've been, you know, I've had a life here, and I've been, not in a bad way, but I've been paying for life there. You know, I've got a rent down there. I've got a mortgage here. I've got car insurance and a car payment down there, and I've got car insurance and a car payment up here, and I've got groceries down there, and I've got groceries up here. So it's been kind of this thing, like everything doubled.
Yeah.
You know, I went into the mindset of, you know, she's following her dreams. I'm going to do whatever I can to do it. And, you know, I was pouring concrete sometimes at midnight, you know, just trying to get things moving. And it's been tough, but we've made do, and we're on the tail end of it now. We're on the downhill slide. Yeah. It'll get better. So,
cause she probably has a year of rotation, and then
yeah,
she'll get placed somewhere, or she'll come back to Wyoming.
She'll come back here to Casper. Yeah. So she does like a month all over the nation at a couple different places. And then after that, she'll come back to Casper here, and she's going to go work for the vet that she's worked for the last, you know, 7 years, and
gotcha.
Be a vet there hopefully. And
dude, that year will go so fast. Like,
and honestly, the last two have to, like,
yeah,
we were just talking. She's in town right now, and we were talking about it the other day. And I said, you know, it seems like just yesterday we were moving you down there, and now,
right.
Now she moved out of her apartment and the lease is over, and now she's Airbnb-ing it wherever she goes. And so it flies by. I mean, it's been tough, but it went by fast.
Yeah. And honestly too, like nowadays it is so easy to communicate with each other, and
oh, yeah,
it with FaceTime and everything. And I mean, but good for you guys for chasing after your dreams, but then supporting each other with those, because yeah, if you and your partner can't be on the same page, it's just, I mean, I don't know how anyone, and maybe I'll rephrase that. If your partner doesn't support you in your business, yeah. It's just, it can be so difficult. And I've been blessed with my wife, Olivia. She's always supported me since day one, yeah. Even when we weren't making any money or it sucked, but it's having that support system is massive. And oh, I know, yeah. We did that. A lot of people like that Dirt Baguettes episode that we did,
yeah.
Where we had our wives on, Riley, Luke's wife, and then my wife, Olivia. And it was just a cool perspective, because nobody really talks about it that much, but it's such a massive piece of your health and then the health of your, yeah, business as well.
Yeah, it definitely, I mean, just having somebody to soundboard off of every night, you know, or, you know, I don't want to yell at one of my guys. I might call my wife and let her, yeah, have it quick, you know, be like, hey, you know what's going on here, but these guys are effing this up and I got to drive, yeah, her. You know, I just let her have it for a little bit. She calms me right down, tells me I need to go back and apologize to somebody, and I'll go back and apologize, and work keeps going. And so it's huge. I mean, the sounding board aspect, the support, you know, it's a pretty big deal. So,
yeah, dude, that's awesome. And then, so on the, so I'm super curious here then, are you guys two S corps or two LLCs, or what two are LLCs. The businesses? LLC. Two,
yeah.
And they're totally separate. Do you pay yourself out of both of them, or is it just out of the precast?
I pay myself out of Earthworks.
Oh, out of the Earthworks. So precast just stays in there?
Precast, yeah. So if you look at them like on the books, Earthworks surpasses precast on income. And that's, gotcha, just because we're doing big commercial jobs, six digits. And precast makes money, don't get me wrong, but precast is doing $400 a day, you know.
Gotcha.
It's pretty good, but yep. I want to leave the money in precast to help with winter stuff, and because that's primarily where our guys are going to go work in the winter, is the precast plant. They're going to go over there, they're going to pour concrete all winter. If it's snowing and I've got a little bit of time, I can go over there and pour concrete. But I take an owner withdrawal out of Custer Earthworks. And we've been doing that for the last year and a half.
Gotcha. And then this is something I've been working on too. Is the owner withdrawal, is that a consistent number every 2 weeks or every month? It is.
Every month I have a consistent amount that I take.
Gotcha. And then do you guys do any distributions if there's profits at the end of the year, end of the quarter, just keep it in?
Just keep it in right now.
Cool. Yeah. I think especially in your guys' line of work, it that's so important too, to just have cash, because all of a sudden you don't get paid from a job and you need
cash to flow is make, king.
And you need to make payroll. Yeah, absolutely. And have you, I mean, it sounds like you've got a really good system going. Like you figured out how much you guys needed to live off of,
yeah,
and then you're paying yourself that, and then everything else it stays in the business. And like you said, cash flow is king, because you can really only move at the speed of cash. Because once something bad happens, you know, you find out who's skinny dipping.
Yeah. And it took me a while to understand that. It took me a while to say, hey, we got to have cash in the bank. Like, for the last like 6 or 7 months, we've implemented profit first for contractors.
Oh, dude, I'm doing that right now.
It's changed our life. Now, don't get me wrong. We started at 1%. So the day we said we were going to start it, 1% to each of the accounts. And that's how we started. And that's how we worked our way up. We kind of dialed in our percentages a little bit better. And in hand with that, I got better at estimating.
Yeah.
So when you look at your estimating and you look at the profit on that job afterwards, you can take that profit and you can look over at your accounts and you can be like, well, how is this going to divvy up? Well, I know my tax payment every quarter is this amount. I know my tax payment, my payroll tax payments this amount every month. Well, there's not enough coming out of that job to even go into that taxes account. So then I'll adjust my estimating kind of, and it kind of goes hand in hand, I feel like. But you know, before the profit first, we were, I can't remember what he calls it in his book, but you know, we were kind of doing that thing. Like every Monday we look at the bank account and be like, okay, well, we can make it till Thursday maybe, you know, yeah. And see how it goes. But when we started that profit first, you know, I feel like it really helped us out a lot. And we had a really bad month last month with vehicle breakdowns. I had about $30,000 just in breakdowns. And
wow.
So profit first kind of went out the window pretty fast, you know, because I had to get some trucks in the shop and I had to get them back out in the road.
Yeah.
So we're recovering from that. And getting back in the dial of profit first. But I think it's the best thing a contractor can do.
Man, that's amazing. So I didn't even know you were running profit first until you just said it right there. But we talked about this on the podcast. I think it was with Benjamin Holmgren on the Dirtbags. We started introducing, you know, profit first, and I am implementing it in Phaser Marketing, which is obviously much different than a construction company, but
same idea.
Same exact idea. And so Mike McCallowicz wrote the book Profit First. And then there's a book Profit First for Contractors, which I believe is Sean Van Dyke.
Yeah. Yep. Sean Van Dyke.
Yep.
That's
so
what we're doing.
Yes. So for anyone listening, that's obviously in construction, listen to that book or read that book, Sean Van Dyke, Profit First for Contractors. At the very, very, very least, it'll teach you how to make money. Like, even if you don't use their system, because most people, they'll read the book, they'll get a lot of great ideas and they'll be better for it, but they won't implement it. And then the second time around, they'll read it again. They say, all right, screw this. I'm sick and tired of having our money kind of, you know, seep out the cracks and there be nothing left. And then they'll implement it and it'll change their whole business. So I'm so excited to be implementing it myself. And then my next goal is to become so well versed in profit first for contractors that I can teach all of our clients that system. So I'm pumped that you're running that same system.
Yeah, it's awesome. I think it's changed the way we look at estimating, job costing. You know, with profit first, we started really keeping track of time, and we weren't really doing that before. And once you start keeping track of time, your estimating is going to change tenfold.
Yeah.
Like I would go in and I'd estimate a job and I'd be like, this was, you know, 2 years ago, year and a half, whatever ago, I'd go in an estimated job. But, well, I think it's going to take me a month. We go in there and a month and a half later, we're still there. And I don't, it doesn't look like I'm losing money, but I left money on the table. So now with like, when we started the profit first, we really said to ourselves, we've got to look at every single aspect that goes into us making money, whether that's keeping track of time, keeping track of maintenance, you know, improving our estimating, really getting down to the nuts and bolts of, you know, how much does it cost us to run a skid steer for an hour? How long does it cost us to, you know, if I'm going to move a skid steer from here to a job that's 3 hours away, what does that cost me? And more or less, and more to that is, what does it cost somebody else to do it? Because I won't always have the time to go get that skid steer on some evening and run it half across the state. I might have to pay a guy tomorrow morning to do it. Now I've lost him off that job. So now that job's in jeopardy. This job's in jeopardy. So, you know, when we implemented Profit First, we went across the board with it. How is this going to improve our estimating, our time tracking, you know, tracking throughout the whole entire company, and how will we improve that based off what we're doing? So,
man, that's awesome. I was listening to, can't remember who it was. Somebody was just talking about this on a podcast, but they're saying, you know, contractors typically are amazing contractors, but they're not typically business first, or, you know, they're good at making top line. But then when it comes to like dialing in the numbers, your gross profit, your net profit, and then also I think you become much better through the years with the cash flow because you've been through some of the issues. But really dialing in your numbers, I think, is so huge. And once you can learn that and have that contractor side to you, I mean, your business can absolutely flourish.
Yeah. And, you know, especially for, you know, us, we're going in on some state jobs now and some government contracts. And, you know, that's not someplace you want to leave any money on the table.
No.
Because they're going to go with low bidder. And if you're 100 grand lower than the next guy, I mean, you might not have done something wrong, but that guy was going to make 100 grand more than you potentially. So, you know, really dialing in our numbers has helped us a lot, I feel like. And we've only, you know, it's a long process because I don't do the same job 4 or 5 times in a week. I'm, you know, I'm doing different concrete jobs out in the field right now. I'm doing this campground. I'm doing, you know, the precast world. I'm getting ready to go fix a sewer line tomorrow. But what I keep telling myself is that if I keep track of all these jobs now, next year, I'll be able to go back and look at it and be like, that took us 44 hours exactly to do that job. Yep. And these are very similar, and that's what I can kind of estimate off of. So
yeah, that's such a great point too, because for people listening that are brand new in business, like this is much, much harder. And that's kind of the point you're getting at there. It's like, you don't know how long it's going to take. Right. You haven't been on that type of job. Yeah. And so to get in there and to do the work, but then to be mindful enough to be tracking it and to then look back on it, so then you can make your future decisions off of that, is just, I think, just very wise in business, and will treat you so much better in the long haul of your business, of building that business, instead of just like a cash sucking job, really.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the reason we're in this is to make money.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Why not make money?
So yeah, it's so true too. And there's definitely, I know some people say like, oh, but I love what I do, I'm passionate about it, and like, I don't need the money, but they go hand in hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. They go hand in hand. You can absolutely love what you do every single day and make money for it, and then bless other people with it.
I think I should rephrase that though. Like, I'm not out here screwing grandma over on a $5,000 driveway charging her 20 grand, but you know, at the end of the day, we all need to make money. I mean, it's just the way of the world, and why not make as much as you possibly can instead of leaving money on the table?
Yep. And it's just, a lot of times it's just business, and it's knowing your stuff, knowing your numbers. It helps you, knowing your numbers will help you say no to more than you'll want to say yes to. And just like knowing which ones you should stay away from, but also getting your accurate bids and making sure that you're not over or under, and that you make the money you need to make to stay in business and also have some left over.
Yeah, pretty much it.
Do you mind if anyone listening has like any questions about that kind of stuff? And obviously, like, you don't know everything, like you said, but I think the best way, so Custer Precast Concrete on Instagram, but also or, Sam,
go ahead.
I was going to say, but also Sam Custer on LinkedIn. You've been on your LinkedIn game. So
I'm trying,
did you have another form you wanted to?
Yeah. So the main Instagram we use now is sam.custer with a K 312.
Perfect. So, perfect.
That's what I post most on. So
awesome. So reach out to him, send him a DM. If you guys have any questions as you're listening to this, you can also obviously reach out to myself as well. I'm, like I said, mine is more on the Profit First, the Mike McCallowicz version, but then I want to study up on the Profit First for Contractors. So, but definitely, and then go follow Sam on LinkedIn as well. So we always harp on LinkedIn and we say like how all you guys need to be on it. And Sam's crushing it on LinkedIn as well. And just putting value out there and just being a little bit halfway consistent can go so far.
I probably should have mentioned that earlier. Probably half the customers I have in the precast sector are from LinkedIn.
Dude, there you go. Like
that, I did, you know, where I got that idea was I was listening to a podcast with Will Schuler.
Oh yeah.
And he said in there, when he first started his company, he went every night, he would reach out to 5, 10, 15 people. And that's all I did. I started sending LinkedIn messages. I would spend hours, you know, stalking companies, trying to find an email for an estimator or a procurement manager, whatever I could find. And I was shooting off emails. And in the midst of me doing all the research on the company, and then I'd send off an email, I was able to personalize that email, if that makes sense.
That's huge.
Yeah, and that's what helped me the most, I feel like. I wasn't sending these blank emails that I would go in, I would change the name to the company, and it would go off. I was, every email I sent out, I hand-typed that whole entire thing out. And I was trying to give examples of how either our earthwork company or our precast company or some little niche or some little thing we provided could help them. And I would try to tailor what they were doing to what we were doing and how we can help them. And our biggest customer this year, for honestly, earthworks and precast, we're doing work for them in both businesses. Our biggest customer this year came from one email at midnight.
Dude, that's,
I emailed him at midnight. He emailed me back the next day, said, thank you for reaching out. We'll keep your information handy. A week later, he called me for his first precast bid, and it hasn't stopped since. And that's been 2 years.
Dude, and I always say the decision makers are on LinkedIn. And so why not be on there with them? But I love how you brought that up because so we're in the digital marketing space, obviously, but I am so anti like cold outreach where it's just copy and paste to 1,000 people. And unfortunately, that's what a lot of some digital marketing is. Yeah. And so we avoid that like the plague. But what you described is jumping on there, researching a little bit, just like it's not hard. I mean, it's jump on LinkedIn, jump on Google, research their company, learn a little bit about them. It might only be 5 to 15 minutes. Type up an email, customize it to them, and let them know how you can help solve their problems or how you can add value to them.
Yeah.
And then I always give them an out. Like if not, no problem. Just keep, you know, let me know if you ever need anything. But it's not about you. It's not about us. It's about them. Like what can you do to help solve their problems? And then I always think back to the book Atomic Habits. You just do 5 of those a day, Monday through Friday at night, you know, just crank those out. It doesn't take long, but all of a sudden you do those week 1, week 2, week 3, 5 weeks in, you have 25 a week. And then, you know, 4 weeks in, you have 100 sent out.
One,
and then
one or two of them takes, you're good.
Yeah. And then they start to compound on top of each other as well. So I'm a huge, huge fan of that.
There was a time where I probably had 200-300 pictures in my phone. Maybe not that much, but I had quite a few pictures in my phone of me at a stoplight taking a picture of a pickup and zooming in on the company name on the door. And then I would take that picture and I'd come back to my computer and I'd figure out where they're out of, what they're doing in Casper. Because, you know, Wyoming in general, maybe not Cheyenne, but Wyoming in general, there's a lot of out-of-state companies here working. Oil and gas. I mean, right now there's this fiber optic push in Wyoming that's absolutely insane. I mean, they're bringing a fiber optic line from Seattle through Wyoming down to Colorado. Like, the amount of work out there right now, but there's nobody, they're all out-of-state companies. And that's how the oil fields are. They're all big corporations out of Texas, Oklahoma, you know, North Dakota. So I would be taking pictures, and, you know, I was at Walmart one night, and there was a guy standing in front of me, and he had this polo on. I could tell he was a clean dress guy. Like, he's the head dude. And he had the name of the company on the back of his polo. I was like zooming in on it, went, looked it up, you know.
That's the worst. Like, when your sound is on and you're just like, shit, no, screw it.
Yeah, you just pose like a selfie.
Yeah. So. Oh man, that's awesome. I love that you brought that up, because it shows, like, it's simple, but it's not easy. You know, it does take the work, and it takes consistent work, and it's not going to happen overnight. That the first, you can't just send the 5 messages then wait for them to respond. You already got to be on the next 5, and then the next 5, and then, you know, just continuing to be out, keep your head above water, be looking for trucks, equipment, new offices popping up, and just any way you can just introduce yourself.
Yeah. It's really not hard. You just gotta, and it's, you know, everybody's like, well, I don't like going and door knocking, or I don't think that's appropriate. And, you know, I don't either, but there's other ways to do it.
Yeah. Not everything you're going to love to do. And if you want to have a successful business, you're going to have a level of things that are going to suck or you don't want to do, but then you get over it as well.
Yeah. Nobody likes firing anybody.
No.
The first time you fire somebody, the next time is a little bit easier. And the next time is a little bit easier. And the third one might suck a little bit more, but then, you know, it gets better. You just got to do it. That's part of being a business owner.
Yeah. What do they say? Slow to hire, quick to fire. I mean, it can be toxic. So you just got to get used to it. And it sucks, but you start getting used to it definitely after a while.
Yeah. I mean, you got to do what you got to do.
Good stuff, Sam. Well, I think, I know this is supposed to be like the shorter version, like Dirt Tales and quicker, all things like that. But thank you for being on. That was amazing. For anyone listening again, definitely reach out to him on LinkedIn and also Instagram. You said it was sam.custer. What was the number?
312.
Give him a follow on Instagram, you know, shoot him a message saying you listened to this episode, and honestly, shoot over any questions you guys have. But we're super excited to keep, you know, Dirt Tales rocking. Let me know if you guys have any people that you want to have on the show or you want to hear. But Sam, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it, you know, over the years.
I appreciate it as well.
Getting to, you know, hear your story, see your story, and like follow each other through the years has been awesome. And I'm excited to see, especially after this next year, like, you know, your wife coming back, see what business really does for you. It's going to be awesome.
We've got big plans on the horizon, but we're not going to jump into them for another probably 9 or 10 months and hit it hard next year and let this year get through and get things settled down. So
absolutely. Well, good stuff, man. So Sam, thank you again for being on our Dirt Tales segment of the Dirtbags podcast, and we'll catch you on the next one.
See ya. Thanks.